Holy Gospel according to Matthew chapter 13. Jesus put before the crowds another parable. The kingdom of heaven may be compared to someone who sowed good seed in his field, but while everybody was asleep, an enemy came and sowed weeds among the wheat, and then went away. So when the plants came up and bore grain, then the weeds appeared as well. And the slaves of the householder came and said to him, "Master, did you not sow good seed in your field? Where then did these weeds come from?" He answered, "An enemy has done this." The slaves said to him, "Then do you want us to go and gather them?" But he replied, "No, for in gathering the weeds, you would uproot the wheat along with them. Let them grow together until the harvest. And at harvest time, I will tell the reapers, 'Collect the weeds first and bind them in bundles to be burned, but gather the wheat into my barn.'" Then he left the crowds and went into the house, and his disciples approached him, saying, "Explain to us the parable of the weeds of the field." He answered, "The one who sows the good seed is the Son of Man. The field is the world, and the good seed are the children of the kingdom. The weeds are the children of the evil one, and the enemy who sowed them is the devil. The harvest is the end of the age, and the reapers are angels. Just as the weeds are collected and burned up with fire, so it will be at the end of the age. The Son of Man will send his angels, and they will collect out of his kingdom all causes of sin and all evildoers, and they will throw them into the furnace of fire, where there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. Then the righteous will shine like the sun in the kingdom of their Father. Let anyone with ears listen." This is the gospel of the Lord. Please be seated. Well, last week is sort of the beginning of a two-part series here. Pastor Rich, if you were here, preached on the parable of the sower and talked about how parables are written and intended to be thought-provoking and mind-bending or a challenge to the listener, and how they usually have a twist and some good news. And he also brought up and kind of helped us wonder why an explanation would be added to a parable when parables are meant to be a bit of a puzzle. Some scholars believe that Matthew went back and added in his own sort of interpretation later that we heard at the end to help teach his community. So that was sort of his understanding of Jesus' words. But we don't know for sure. Either way, today's parable comes just a few paragraphs after last week's, and it brings its own set of curiosities and questions. Seed is still featured in this story, but this time, instead of scattering that good seed all willy-nilly into the wind, the sower put it all in his field, as expected. But at a vulnerable time, the enemy crept in and planted weeds throughout the field. And so then when both kinds of seeds started growing, the workers realized there was a problem. And, interesting note, they questioned the sower about the quality of his seed. I feel like that's its own sermon. And then they were prepared to go and gut out the field. The first people I've ever heard of who eagerly volunteered to weed a garden. But the landowner told them it would be impossible to tell the wheat from the weed until later, and that uprooting one would harm the other. And so instead he instructed them, just wait. To wait until it was harvest time, and then everything could be sorted out to protect the wheat from the weeds. So with that, and then the explanation that Matthew kind of tacked on at the end, it seems pretty clear cut, right? The wheat is the good Christians, the weeds are the bad people, and God will rescue us and destroy them in the end. Problem solved. At first glance, this text seems like a good model for us to start sorting out the world and putting everyone in a pile. So you're wheat, so you go over there, lucky you, and you're clearly a weed, so you're going to go over here and we'll just start putting people in their piles. Well, if the problem with last week is that it found us trying to be soil inspectors for our neighbors, this week we run the risk of thinking that we are botanists, making unqualified decisions about which qualities make people wheat or weed. Let's see, it might have to do with your depth and type of faith and who you worship. It might have to do with your status or your political leaning, your level of niceness, your sexual orientation or your view on hot button issues. Those will be the ways that we decide who's in and who's out when it comes to God's garden of love. The problem, of course, is that we all see ourselves as wheat, right? We're all wheat. We're definitely in. Nobody willingly admits, I'm probably a weed and I don't really have a place in God's realm. And so the parable begins to twist. Who's in? Who's out? And who gets to decide? The parable makes it clear that it's not the questioning servants, but the reapers, who Matthew decides aren't even of this earth. They are the ones who take care of sorting at harvest time. The people who are complaining about the weeds among the wheat, those people who want to start zealously purifying the kingdom on their own terms, they are not actually given permission to do any weeding. The sower, the Jesus character in the story, tells them that dictating the makeup of his lot is not their job. In fact, nothing in the field, that nobody who is even close to the field is given permission to make decisions about what is allowed in the field. And yet, we're all tempted to do this, right? We're certain that the wider church or our community, even God, would be better off if we could just like fire up our weed whackers and get out there and tell certain people that they're not welcome in the family. It's so tempting. And so the parable twists a little more. Who are these weeds exactly that we're so eager to get rid of? Well, we know from the story that they come from the enemy. And we know that in the end, they don't get a share in God's kingdom, even though, note, they do live in God's kingdom, right? Because the whole field is the kingdom of heaven. But the parable says that it's basically impossible to tell the weeds from the wheat until they're fully matured. So who are they? How do we know who to be on the lookout for in the field? Well, Matthew's explanation says the weeds are causes of sin and evildoers, which again, at first glance, sends us running toward those human-made categories of whose sin is bad enough to label them an evildoer and whose sin is probably fine because, hey, everyone does it and so do I. Well, causes of sin, that phrase in Greek, is the same phrase that Matthew uses when he talks about stumbling blocks, things that we put in front of other people. The idea that when he says, if your eye causes you to sin, pluck it out, that's the same phrase too. Things that cause brokenness or things that cause people to stumble. They're things that we do or they're sort of desires that well up in us. Interestingly enough, it's the same phrase that Jesus uses when he says to Peter, get behind me, Satan. You are a stumbling block to me. You are a cause of sin to me. Should we assume then that Peter is unwelcome in God's kingdom of love? Similarly, the Greek that's used for the word evildoers has kind of a fuzzy translation. It makes a little bit more sense to say it literally, the ones that bring about wickedness or sin. So if we were to parse that out just a little bit more, it sounds to me like evildoers is really a reference to that enemy in the beginning of the story that planted the weeds in the first place. And the causes of sin are the things that tempt us to make broken choices. So what if the weeds aren't people at all? What if the weeds are concepts? What if the weeds are powers that are at work in this world, that sort of piece of evil, not people, but the idea, things that are within our own hearts, things that the enemy has planted in and among us that have a huge effect on how we use our free will? And what if the wheat and the weeds look so similar that they are sort of interchangeable at times? Let's take a few examples. Capitalism. We thrive on that, right? At its core, we believe that it's fair and that it's a positive thing here. And yet, if it's unchecked, it can quickly give way to hoarding and to scarcity thinking. And those are weeds that can choke out generosity. Or independence. We love that word, right? It's designed to help us grow and to learn for ourselves and to become sort of fully functioning. Except It can actually turn into a weed of self-reliance and selfishness. And that gets tangled up with the roots of community and interdependence because that's how we were actually created. Or let's think about the fight or flight reflex. This is built into our brains for our own protection, right? This is the thing that saves us if a lion were to come charging at us, because that happens a lot. It helps us survive danger, and yet it can closely resemble self-preservation at the cost of anyone or anything that looks remotely different than us or maybe asks us to change in any way. And then it becomes the weed of fear. And that weed can kill inclusivity and hospitality and even creativity and playfulness. So these powers are at work in and among us, and they can get twisted so easily. So perhaps we're all a little bit weed and a little bit wheat. We all have that in our hearts, that capability, or as we are maybe more familiar with the phrase, simultaneously saint and sinner. Maybe we are good seed, but we have those metaphorical broken links in our DNA. Or as St. Paul said, I do not do what I want to do and what I shouldn't do. That's what I seem to keep doing. Or maybe if we are real honest with ourselves, we can take a page from the book of our friends who attend AA meetings, where the first step is to confess we are powerless over this sin and our lives have become unmanageable. That sounds a lot like weeds trying to overtake wheat to me. The weeds have always been there. We don't know why. And we, along with the servants in the story, have certainly questioned God as to the presence of evil in the world and in our hearts without answer. But if we're really honest with ourselves, the weeds are not just out there, but in here. But that's where the good news comes in. That's where this parable has something really wonderful to tell us. Just like the sower, God is waiting patiently for us, waiting as we strive every day to do our best to follow the way that Jesus laid out for us, living like wheat, but God ultimately knows that we cannot do it ourselves. And so even as God forgives us every day and loves us in spite of those weeds, God also promises to one day fully purge us of our weedy parts. And even though it seems that evil often wins in the world and wins in our own lives, the reapers get the final say, not the enemy. All those powers of evil, hatred and fear and violence and greed, they will be destroyed once and for all, burned up and gone. And God's kingdom, God's garden will be beautiful. And we will be finally made into the healthy wheat that we were created to be. But what does that mean for the meantime? We Lutherans are not keen to just sit around and twiddle our thumbs waiting for the end of time. That's not our call. There's still a kingdom to be lived out right here and now. And those weeds are still active and alive in and among us. So what do? We wake up each morning covered in grace. And we look for ways to be fruitful wheat, to serve and to welcome, to love and to feed, to clothe and to heal and to reconcile with one another. But this doesn't mean that we just sit back and allow poisonous behavior in the kingdom just because the offender is our brother or our sister or even ourselves. We can call out the strangling of those roots that's happening, and we can work to redirect the plants without uprooting and excommunicating all of God's children. The parable makes it clear that we need each other to survive. So let's see and name and act toward those actions that are unhealthy and dangerous for the kingdom, but let's not play God and judge. We can, with the help of God, try to see the kingdom through the eyes of the sower instead of through the eyes of the servants, who only see weeds that need to be pulled. As you heard, we went to Caro with a couple of youth, actually 17 youth, 2 weeks ago, and we learned a lot. I encourage you to ask myself or them about what we learned of the history of Caro and what they've been through, but what we learned is that from the outside, it looks like Caro is a lost cause, And there are powers at work to just sort of level it out and displace everybody that's still there and kind of start over for some wealthier people. From the outside, people told us before we went that Caro is a lot like a weed. But getting to know the community on the inside, it looked a lot more like wheat. The world has taken Caro and put it in a box and closed the lid and said, case closed. It's done. But we are not the reapers. We don't get to make judgments or pronounce a verdict. There's still life. There's still love. There's still hope in Caro. And hope always leaves room for God's miraculous work. And so in that town and all over the world, we weedy wheat carry on together in this beautiful mess that is God's garden. And we might look around and shake our heads at all who have been invited to be here, but we are in this together. We can trust that God is at work in all of us, nurturing us, shaping, cultivating, growing us into kingdom wheat. And knowing that our gardener believes that we are good seed, worthy of rescue and fullness of life, we are free now to carry on with the crucial work of loving one another in God's name. Thanks be to God.